Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. How to Be an Imperfectionist by Stephen Gies is a practical self-development book about loosening the grip of perfectionism and replacing it with a more flexible approach to action, self-evaluation, and personal progress, rather than treating perfectionism as a harmless preference for high standards. Gies presents it as a limiting pattern that can produce avoidance, rumination, fear of mistakes, and excessive dependence on approval. The book belongs to the productivity and personal growth genre, but its emphasis is not on doing more through pressure. Its purpose is to help readers act despite uncertainty, reduce self-judgment, and care less about ideal conditions while caring more about forward movement. Gies builds on themes associated with small actions and motivation management, but the central idea is distinct imperfectionism is not laziness or low ambition, but a deliberate reduction of unnecessary standards that block behavior. The book is written for readers who want concrete mental tools rather than a clinical treatment model. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, perfectionism is framed as a care management problem rather than a virtue. A central idea in the book is that perfectionism is determined less by talent or ambition than by what a person chooses to care about. Gies argues that perfectionists often care intensely about outcomes, appearances, timing, approval, and the avoidance of mistakes. This creates a mental environment in which ordinary action becomes difficult because too many conditions must be satisfied before movement feels acceptable. The book, therefore, reframes perfectionism as a problem of misplaced concern. The issue is not that readers care too much in general, but that they care too much about variables that often cannot be controlled. Imperfectionism, in contrast, means shifting concern toward actions that can be taken now, even if they are incomplete, awkward, or below an imagined ideal. This distinction matters because it prevents the book from advising readers simply to stop caring. Instead, it asks them to care differently. High standards are not rejected, but they are subordinated to participation, experimentation, and continuation. The practical implication is that progress becomes possible when perfect conditions stop functioning as prerequisites. Secondly, action is prioritized over ideal readiness to reduce avoidance and paralysis. Gies treats inaction as one of the most damaging consequences of perfectionism. When a task must be done with perfect timing, perfect energy, or perfect quality, it becomes easy to delay it indefinitely. The book responds by emphasizing small, imperfect action as a way to weaken the fear surrounding performance. This connects with Gies' broader interest in mini habits, but in this book, the focus is specifically on how imperfection makes action psychologically easier. A person who permits an imperfect first attempt has fewer reasons to postpone. The reasoning is concrete action, produces feedback, feedback improves judgment, and repeated attempts create competence. Avoidance produces none of these benefits, even if it preserves the fantasy of future excellence. This approach also challenges the common belief that motivation must precede action. Gies suggests that waiting to feel ready is often another form of perfectionist conditioning. Often, by lowering the threshold for starting, readers can begin before confidence appears and allow confidence to develop from evidence. The method is especially relevant for creative work, exercise, communication, and other activities where overthinking can replace doing. Thirdly, the binary mindset simplifies tasks that perfectionism turns into endless gradients. One of the more distinctive tools associated with the book is the binary mindset. Gies contrasts perfectionist evaluation, which tends to measure tasks along a demanding scale of quality, with a simpler binary standard based on whether the task was attempted or completed in a minimal acceptable form. This does not mean that quality never matters. Rather, it means that early action and consistency are protected from being destroyed by excessive evaluation. A perfectionist might judge a workout, writing session, conversation, or study period by how closely it matched an ideal version. The binary mindset asks a simpler question: did the person take the action or not? This is useful because many beneficial behaviors depend first on repetition, not excellence. By reducing the number of ways to fail, the binary standard lowers emotional resistance. It also separates the habit of showing up from later refinement. In practical terms, the tool helps readers stop treating every performance as a referendum on ability or identity. The first goal is participation. Improvement can follow once participation is no longer threatened by perfectionist judgment. Fourthly, language shifts such as should to could weaken internal pressure. The book pays attention to self-talk because perfectionism is reinforced by the way people interpret obligations. Gies highlights the difference between should and could as an example of how language shapes emotional pressure. Should implies a rigid demand and often carries moral weight if the person does not act. They have failed in a personal sense. Could leaves room for choice, experimentation, and context. This is not a superficial word game. The distinction changes the relationship between the person and the task. When an action is framed as a force requirement, resistance can increase, especially if the task already feels threatening. When it is framed as an available option, the mind can approach it with less defensiveness. The broader lesson is that perfectionism often disguises preferences as commands. Guise encourages readers to notice when internal language turns flexible goals into absolute rules. Replacing harsh demands with possibility-based phrasing can make responsibility feel more manageable without eliminating it. This technique is practical because it can be applied immediately during procrastination, rumination, social anxiety, or fear of mistakes. Lastly, mistakes, approval-seeking, and imposter feelings are treated as perfectionist traps. Guise connects perfectionism to several familiar patterns: fear of making mistakes, seeking approval, rumination, and imposter syndrome. The common mechanism is excessive dependence on flawless performance as proof of worth or belonging. If mistakes are interpreted as evidence of inadequacy, then ordinary learning becomes emotionally dangerous. If approval is treated as necessary validation, then behavior becomes constrained by imagined external judgment. If imposter feelings dominate, success may not produce security because the person continues to fear exposure. The book does not present these issues as deep clinical diagnoses, and it should not be read as a substitute for therapy when distress is severe. Its contribution is practical and cognitive. It helps readers see how perfectionist rules keep these experiences alive by allowing imperfect performance. Readers can gather evidence that mistakes are survivable, approval is not always necessary, and competence does not require total certainty. Guise also addresses rumination by distinguishing between productive reflection and repetitive mental replay. The goal is not indifference to quality or relationships, but reduced dependence on impossible standards as the basis for action and self-respect. In conclusion, How to Be an Imperfectionist is best suited for readers who recognize that perfectionism is costing them action, ease, creativity, or confidence. It will be especially useful for people who procrastinate because conditions are not ideal, avoid projects because early attempts may be poor, or judge themselves harshly for ordinary mistakes. The practical benefit lies in its simple behavioral and cognitive tools. Manage what you care about. Lower the threshold for action, use binary standards when appropriate, soften rigid self-talk, and treat mistakes as part of participation rather than proof of failure. Intellectually, the book is valuable because it separates excellence from perfectionism. It shows that high standards can coexist with imperfect starts, while perfectionism often prevents the very practice needed to improve. Compared with many self-help books about confidence or productivity, it stands out for focusing on the permission structure behind action. It is not primarily a book about optimizing schedules, building elaborate systems, or analyzing childhood causes in depth. Its strength is a compact, accessible framework for reducing the psychological friction that blocks everyday behavior. Readers seeking a research-heavy clinical treatment may find it too brief or informal, but those wanting clear, usable strategies for acting with less self-judgment are likely to find it distinctive and practical. If you would like to support Stephen Guise, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.